Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour on its new time. On Wednesdays. I just decided to take a yoga class on Tuesdays and so switched over, took a sabbatical of about a month. And so I'm really excited to be back on the air and offering you the programming that you're used to. This is a forum for people who are interested in the intersection between intuition, imagination, manifestation, and connecting with all things intuitive. So if these are topics that are of interest to you, you're definitely in the right place. I encourage you to share your pretty shiny picture with Inner Voice so we know that you're following the show and you'll get updates on upcoming shows. If I sound a little rattled, our power went out at our house this evening after a storm and I am at the coffee shop doing the show. So I just had to walk here real fast and I'm here, so hopefully it'll go off without a hitch. I'm really excited about our guest tonight. Let's see here. Let me scroll up. I'm trying to see the screen here. Okay, awesome. Our guest is James Wells, and James I was really, really intrigued with James's approach to tarot. I think sometimes tarot can be very, very divinational and get us to focus on fixing things instead of just accepting working with our intuition and accepting divine timing. And so sometimes we can go to a reader with expectations that might not be realistic for them to fix things. And so I was really intrigued with James's profile. He's doing what looks to be a wonderful class. He's getting ready to offer, called the Tarot Course That Matters, Why the Tarot Course Matters. And it's all about James's approach to working with the cards and to deeper transformation and deeper transcendence by knowing yourself better. So with no further ado, I want to introduce James. Are you there, James?
I am here, Jenny.
Awesome. Cool beans. So glad you're there and that went off without a hitch. And I'm really excited to talk to you tonight. I just love your approach to the cards. I listened to you on, I think it was Attune Radio, and just loved your approach and the way that you look at the cards and all the amazing things the cards can do that is not about divination and is not about, you know, fortune telling. So I'm just really intrigued to talk with you all about that. How did you get your start? It's a little off the beaten path to do what you do. How did that journey unfold for you? How did you realize that you had an affinity for working with tarot and doing inner work and this sort of thing?
Well, even as a child, I had inclinations toward wondering what made people tick and what makes life tick and the world tick and the universe tick and so forth. And I was always exploring things. And, you know, I was reading from a very early age. From the age of 3, I was reading books and, you know, got frustrated even in grade 1 when people couldn't pronounce words and so forth. So you know, even from a young age, I was reading mythology and reading, you know, Old Testament stories of, you know, waters being parted and of you know, the Greek gods and goddesses and their trials and tribulations and triumphs and wondering, I guess, in my own small child way, how that relates to us and feeling an affinity for them and the Egyptian mythology and many others. And so when I was, I think, 12 years old, I was reading a book at the time called Let ESP Work for You by a woman named Patsy Ruth Welding. And there was a section of 7 or 8 pages that described tarot cards, and it was really quite yummy the way she described it. You know, it didn't come off as flaky, or she had a really delicious way of describing the cards. You can tell I like food. That appealed to even my 12-year-old mind and So I saved up my money and went to a local games store and purchased my first deck of cards, the 1JJ Swiss Tarot deck.
Uh-huh.
And began to play with that and discover that I really enjoyed the patterns and designs on the cards and how they made me think of things that maybe I wouldn't normally think of. And discovered I had a real knack for it. You know, high school teachers used to invite me to stay after school to see if I would look at the cards for them and things like that.
That's awesome.
And I had a couple of cousins I would practice with and a couple of friends at school that were kind of interested. And so, and of course, myself.
What intrigues me as you're telling this story is how comfortable you were with your own process of connecting with your intuition from the time that you were really young. I know people, too, who read in high school, but no one who, you know, went in and read for their teachers and things like that. So it's so awesome that you had teachers that were open to it and that you were able to share it with them. That's just wonderful.
Uh-huh. One of them even... my grade 13 English teacher, in fact, had me over to her place for a Saturday lunch one day, and I think she had three or four friends over, and I looked at the tarot with them, and we had a grand afternoon.
Awesome. So I assume that you were approaching the tarot at that point from, like, an archetypal perspective, the stories they tell, and you were talking earlier about mythology and the importance of mythology in your early life, and I think that when we look at the tarot in that way, it offers so much deeper of a lens because it's a universal way of looking at the stories that we tell in our lives, and it's so cool that you were able to connect with that so young and so clearly.
Yeah, I think when I was younger, to be quite honest, I think I was a little more surfacey with them, you know, a little bit more events-based from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit more try to, you know, guess amazing things about people because, you know, part of me kind of thought in my, you know, 12 to 18-year-old mind that that's what one did with the cards. And that shifted around the time I was 18 when I discovered a book that really changed my approach and also changed the way I thought about living. So.
Awesome. What was the book?
Choice-Centered Tarot by Gail Fairfield.
Uh-huh. Awesome. And how did you shift your approach? How did that change the way that you read or the way that you look at tarot?
Well, the title intrigued me, first of all, because, you know, I came from a family in which, you know, half the family had kind of a psychic streak. My dad's mom was a trance medium and a healer and a profound psychic, and people, you know, filled the place up whenever she went to speak somewhere. And that was kind of what I knew. And I think that had a really good place. I mean, she helped a lot of people with her psychic gifts. And so I kind of took that as a model. I guess this is what I should do with the cards. And when I read Gail's first book, this is her first book from the 80s, there was this whole idea of involving the readee or the client or the clairant or whatever you want to call them, dialoguing with them, inviting feedback so that the two of you can come to agreement on what might this card and its core concept be saying about this particular situation in your particular life. And so there was that piece that shifted for me, and the idea of custom creating spreads based on what people really need to know. You know, I didn't have to do the Celtic Cross or the Tree of Life or Past, Present, Future or any of those prefabricated things. It was okay to create something for the moment. And so those really opened up for me. And one thing that I still stick to, I don't have a lot of rules around using the tarot, but one about which I'm completely adamant, and as I, you know, revisited a lot of Gail's writing and stuff, I realized that, oh yeah, there's a phrase in the book that really stands out, and it's printed in capital letters in the book, which is, you know, always relating the card You know, always interpret the card straightforwardly in its position. You know, if you're asking about A, the card is not about B. If you're asking about B, the card is not about F.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also the idea that all cards are neutral, and it's that our questions that slant it one way or the other. There's no such thing as a good or a bad card.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that that's really, I think that's a thing for clients to understand, and it's kind of an approach to life too. You know, this idea that something is preordained as bad or good. You know, that's an energy that a client can come in with sometimes. And I think that when you're talking about this whole idea of present-centeredness and the importance of the story in the moment, and that the power of the spread in the moment, a lot of times that can be such a powerful thing for a client to see, because they're so inclined to, you know, put a bad or good spin on the cards, or look to you to have so much power for how you read the cards. And I think just being present with the client and saying, this is what I'm seeing and how are you seeing it, that can be a whole new approach for them, for the way to be in the world. You know, it's such a powerful way to work with them.
Yeah. There's a rather well-known astrologer named Noel Till, and he says something over and over again that I quite like, is, you know, planets don't make things happen, people do. And
absolutely.
I really feel,
love it.
I feel the same about the cards. You know, the cards are great catalysts, but a true catalyst actually doesn't make things happen. It just sort of, you know, inspires the thing to happen. And it's up to us how we do that, which brings
and
us to my style.
And doesn't predetermine the outcome either, you know.
No. I think we have a whole bunch of potentials within us, you know, and the way I look at using the tarot as I use it, and I'm not saying, by the way, this is the only way it should be used.
Right.
I hope nobody gets that impression. I think that, you know, Madame Lazonga on the street corner has her place if you're looking just for some light entertainment or something. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with that. But the way I work with it, it's simply about, I think that there are potentials that exist within us and around us, and a tarot session helps us become more aware of the potentials within us and around us, so that we can make choices around which of these do we want to keep, which of them do we want to maybe make adjustments to, and which of them do we want to put on the back burner or discard completely.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wonder, do you ever let the clients touch the cards and move the cards around in a spread to be in a place that's a better indicator of what the story is unfolding for them? Do you let them do that kinesthetic piece, or have you ever done that?
I think that's my main reason for having the client mix the cards. You know, to me, it's less about energetic stuff, and it's more about, I want to involve as many of the senses as possible. You know, we see the images, the mixing of the cards, whether they shuffle them or stir them around on the table or whatever they do, gets the kinesthetic sense involved. Quite often I serve tea or water or juice, so the sense of taste is present, and all that kind of thing.
Awesome.
The words
that
brings in the sound.
That was what I was so intrigued with listening to the other program that I listened to that you were on. You were talking about tarot journaling, and you were just talking about using the cards as a sensory thing to help people to get in touch with their senses and their own, you know, their own empowerment. And I just thought you had so many, I can't remember right now specifically the ways that you were talking about, but you had so many different ways to work with the cards. And kind of a springboard for their own creativity. And I wish I could remember specifically the example that you were sharing, because it was wonderful. But I wanted to talk to you. But I can't remember. I can't even remember what show it was on. But I wanted to talk to you about that, and about the tarot journaling, and about how you use the cards with the querent, or however you want to say that, as the centerpiece of you know, of their story, because that's what I was so intrigued with.
Where do I start with that? I'll start with a word you just used a very short time ago, the word empowerment.
Yeah.
And That might be a good springboard. So one thing, we hear the word empowerment used a lot in the human potential movement, the spiritual realms, and so forth. And I think it really behooves us to pay attention to the word and how we use it, because mm-hmm. I hear so many people say that they empower their clients to do X, Y, or Z,
yes.
or they
yes.
they empower the person to be such and such. And I really take a page from Mary Greer, somebody else from whom I learned many great things. When she said several times in workshops and so forth, if I empower you, who really has the power here?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Even in certain spiritual meditative traditions, when there's an empowerment ceremony, for instance, I think in some sects of Buddhism, you know, certain holy people give empowerment ceremonies. To me, the ceremony or the tarot session or whatever simply sets up conditions wherein the person can empower him or herself to
mm-hmm.
she or he choose. And I like to think
yeah.
of empowerment as an increased capacity to make choices and then to transform those choices into desired actions and outcomes. Empowerment really is the ability to access one's next focus and to pursue that next focus without any or with less, perhaps, impediment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's such an interesting piece about empowerment, because I think often that there's this idea, and I've worked really hard with my own client base to not encourage people to come for readings that are like in a place where they need a particular answer now, you know, because I think that sets up a power dynamic where they have very high expectations of you, and it disempowers them when they need to be empowered, when they need to hold that space themselves and figure out how to work with that energy themselves. So I really, really appreciate what you're saying about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I in general, I avoid that type of interaction because it just mm-hmm. it isn't nice for me, and it isn't nice or helpful to them. And the
mm-hmm,
way I do that
mm-hmm.
is I have a little, a very brief but helpful intake process in which I send them 5 questions, and their responses to the questions help me gauge, are we a good match? Do I need to do a little education? Are we on the same page? Do I want to refer them to someone else? It helps me design the spread. It helps me to, it helps them to focus on what's truly important. You know, they're spending time with me, they're spending money on the session, and it's important that, you know, it's going to be useful to them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think that's wonderful. I wish more clinicians did that sort of thing, you know, offered that sort of an option to figure out a goodness of fit and all of that. So, yeah, absolutely.
Just because somebody contacts us doesn't mean we need to take the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's,
yeah,
there's 7 billion people in the world, or a little more than 7 billion people in the world. I can't serve them all. You can't serve them all. There's somebody for everyone, and some people need this tarot experience, and other people don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people are looking for a predictive reading, and that's what they want, you know, that is
yeah.
what they want, and that's okay, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay, but it's not going to happen likely in something that I offer. You know, I think we can forecast a bit based upon certain conditions after we've looked at things like inner and outer motivations or pros and cons, advantages, disadvantages, resources, blocks. We can kind of get a sense then, well, if you do this, avoid that, connect with this kind of person, this type of thing is most likely within such and such time frame. Bear in mind that every time you think about it and make choices around it, that can shift.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about how you do this tarot journaling and what that looks like, that process.
Yeah. Well, tarot journaling is really only a small part of what I do. I mean, I journal every day, and the tarot usually comes into it. And my work with people tends to be more like a tarot counseling or tarot consulting, but certainly journaling can come into my work with them, too. But for myself, the card or the cards become a springboard for just, I'm stuck with what I might want to write today, so let me pull a card. I would love to scribble on the page. I don't know what color markers I want to scribble with. I'll pull a card and use the colors in the card. I feel like I need to do something creative, but I don't know what it is. Oh, let me pull a card or three cards or whatever, and maybe turn it into a short story or a poem or something like that. And then, you know, where do I find myself in the poem or in the short story? I had a great time last week, in fact. I'm in the middle of a hanged man year. Based on the numerology of my birthday, I'm in the middle of a year that corresponds to Trump 12, the hanged man. And my partner and I just moved to a different town about 3 weeks ago, and I was invited to a local writer's open mic evening, and I thought, well, it might be kind of cool to let some of the local people know about my work by, as a tarot person, by, you know, writing a piece of poetry based on my year card, and then to present that at the open mic. And I had a great time writing the piece about the hanged man and presenting it. And as I did so, I wanted to make it more than, oh, here's James up there talking. And so I passed around copies of Trump 12 in different forms, you know, a tarot to Marseille on that side of the room, a Toth tarot over there, and just let people handle and look at the hanged man and different versions of it as I read the poem. And I invited them to imagine that it was a voice, that the voice they were hearing speak these words were spoken by an aspect of themselves speaking to them. And so it became more interactive that way rather than, you know, James standing up front reading a poem. You know, if you like, toward the end of the show at this time, I can read the poem, but we don't have to go there if you don't want to.
Doesn't matter. Honestly, it's fine to go there. It's fine to go there. I actually think that using the tarot in those kinds of ways can be so transformational. You know, it can really help you to grow in a direction that you might not have been inclined. If you let your ego lead or your logical part lead, you wouldn't be inclined to grow that way. But if you kind of invite the energy in and allow the energy to show up however it does and then kind of follow it, all of a sudden you find this yourself in this place that is where you're curious instead of, you know, already knowing your trajectory, you know?
Yeah. And you know, there are different ways of doing it. You can move a card, you can dance a card, you can mime a card, you can do movement, you can tarot drama. Wonderful short stories and novels and so forth have been written. There's a book edited by Kathleen Matthews and Rachel Pollack called Tarot Tales, a bunch of short stories. Italo Calvino wrote The Castle of Cross Destinies. Diane de Prima, the beat poet, she has written poetry and taught how to do poetry over the years using the tarot and Kabbalah as a template for poetic creation and creation of the self, really. And I think that's the greatest creative project that one can ever work on with the tarot, is that's oneself.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. That's awesome.
I've used the cards too in team building or group building games and activities. You know, the first night of a retreat together, I might pull out some cards and we'll do a game with them so people get to know each other a little better and feel more comfortable expressing themselves in a group setting. I've used it in businesses to help the team realize where some of their strengths and some of their weaknesses are but doing it in a fun, playful way using the cards.
How would you do that if you were to give an example of that? How would you do that?
That's a really good question. Well, you know, I like to begin quite often with some kind of appreciation activity. So sometimes I've just had people pull out a bunch of cards and then they draw one for each person and let some quality in it speak about each of their colleagues and just say, oh, what I appreciate about you is your skill at blah, blah, blah.
Awesome.
Just so, you know, they really feel a greater sense of connection. Other times it might be, you know, I work out their life cards based on the numerology of their birth date and just say, okay, all of you who are fives, go in this corner. All of you who are threes, go over here. All of you who are twos, you go over here. Read the sheet that has some of the qualities of the High Priestess or the Hierophant or the Empress on it and, you know, talk about how that's real for all of you and then come together or make a creative piece, you know, make up a poem or a song or a dance or something and present it to the rest of the group and see how you might, who has skills and talents based on their cards that might merge with skills and talents in other cards, and, you know, this kind of thing, just to make it a little lighter, a little more creative, get them out of, you know, head knowledge only.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
Sometimes clients and I do some really creative stuff, too. You know, I've had a couple of things come to mind about rituals or ceremonies that have been created out of cards that really stood out for clients. And, you know, several years ago, there was a woman who had a specific fear that she was dealing with. And we were using a deck called the Healing Tarot by Jennifer Moore. It's a photographic deck, and it's beautiful. And the Ten of Swords really struck this person as being important in her healing process, and so we looked at it, and you know, it's a scene in a forest, and there's a kind of a mound of leaves on the ground with the swords pinned around it. It almost looked like a grave, and we came up with the idea based on that image that she compose a funeral service for, and then carry out the funeral and burial of her fear. And so, that was kind of a creative thing from that card. A fellow I know who wanted to develop more intuition in his everyday life and in his work, we kind of thought, well, the High Priestess would be something to do, and it's the number two in the majors, and so maybe twice a month, maybe full moon and new moon, you could do something. And, well, she's meditating and contemplating, so, we came up with the idea. On the full moon and new moon of every month, He put a chair in the middle of the room, lit a white candle on one side of himself, a black candle on the other side of himself, and put a blue scarf over his head, and then just sat and meditated for 15 to 20 minutes in that pose. You know, and he felt like he was really developing that more intuitive, tuning in kind of sense just by doing that a couple of times a month. So those are some of the creative, interesting things. You know, besides the journaling, you know, there's the poetry, all the movement, the ritual, the group processes, the, you know, working on self, as I said, is probably the greatest creative project one can use with the cards.
Absolutely. I'm intrigued with the idea of tarot counseling, too, and how... Mm-hmm. how that came about for you and how that differs from the traditional tarot readings and how you do that, how you approach that.
Well, it's interesting that you're curious about that because I think you briefly mentioned at the beginning I'm about to embark on an 8-week course that I'm teaching called Tarot Counseling for Self and Others. Yeah. And
don't worry, I'll get you to talk about that. I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah.
It's on the radar.
So the timing was just right. And so this is a topic obviously dear to my heart.
Yes.
A, because I love doing it, and B, because I'm about to teach an 8-week course in it. So, you know, the verb to counsel just comes from an old English word that means to consult. And so, you know, I know there are certain states and provinces and so forth where you need to be careful of the term counseling, and that's cool, that's fine. You can use whatever terminology you want with it. But ultimately, to counsel means to consult. So it can be as casual as sitting with a friend at the kitchen table over a cup of tea and talking about what's going on, you know, to something more formal like a series of sessions in Jungian analysis. So
that's, right.
Yeah, counseling can be any of those and anything in between. One of the things that I'm bringing into the course is the Canadian Psychotherapy and Counselors Association has a wonderful definition of counseling and that we can apply in tarot work, which is the skilled and principled use of relationships to facilitate self-knowledge, emotional acceptance and growth, and the optimal development of personal resources. And so I think that's a beautiful way to describe counseling in general. And then when we add the tarot to that, we add the element of surprise, the images that come up, the symbols that come up that might take us places where we wouldn't normally go. It would make us say things about ourselves and our lives and our situations and our feelings that maybe we wouldn't normally say out loud. I've had people in one 90-minute session discover things through the tarot imagery and the questions we ask around the tarot imagery that they hadn't talked about, discovered, thought about in 10 years of therapy. And so sometimes it can be a shortcut in that process for people. You know, she ended up firing her therapist and going to somebody else, and when she called to tell me that, I said, well, that wasn't really the point, but, you know. But it really does, I think, cut through because it's a deck of cards. There's an element of, you know, remembering that the roots of the tarot are a trick-taking game in Northern Italy, and because there's something about that energy that's still there. Oh, there's a playfulness about it. There's the element of surprise, as I said. There's the randomness of it, I think, can be really powerful. And really, when it comes to tarot counseling, the tarot practitioner's job is to create conditions wherein the client is invited to be the expert on his or her own life. You know, it goes back to that empowerment thing we talked about. And so the tarot consultant, counselor, reader, whoever, their job is to guide the client, through an experience of the cards, not just talk about the cards, but through an experience of the cards. So through listening to the person as they talk about their situation and the card imagery, through strategic questioning, open-ended questions, of which I'm a great fan, mirroring back to them things that they say or body posture that they use, and even helping them summarize the stuff so that it becomes a clearly tied up statement or a clearly tied up insight instead of just a whole bunch of rambling. And through this, the reedy, the client, the clairant, whoever, they can become aware of meaning, of insights, options, and even solutions, him or herself. And the person really discovers through this journey what his or her values are and how those values can enhance or limit him or her, or how those values and assumptions that they've discovered or unearthed might be beneficial to their situation or how they might be detrimental to their situation. And it really helps them own the stuff themselves. With, you know, this way of working, the tarot practitioner is really kind of a tour guide of the soul. Or as Mary Greer says, a midwife of the soul.
I love the idea of, you know, the mirroring and the kind of shaping that you're talking about, you know, so that they're not just saying random things, but you're noticing over a period of time themes that are coming up that seem particularly relevant and this sort of thing, and that can help them get to a whole new place of awareness in themselves. And I think that kind of nuanced observing is just a wonderful, wonderful gift, you know, to be able to work with someone in that way, you know, so that they're able to pull something together or see something for themselves, and all you're really doing is holding the space or the container for them to do that, you know.
Yeah, I love the fact you use the word container. It's one of my favorite words for this kind of work because we do something, you know, we do things to shape the container, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I keep it pretty simple. I have them, I just say, okay, you're ready to begin now. Could you please mix the cards? I mean, for somebody else, it might be doing a Golden Dawn banishing ritual. For somebody else, it might be lighting
mm-hmm.
incense candles and then putting them out again at the end and doing something else at the end. The important thing is to sort of delineate, now we're beginning tarot time.
Mm-hmm.
So that
mm-hmm.
takes place. And then it's important at the end to say, now we are leaving tarot time. We're going back
mm-hmm.
into everyday life. However, maybe we're going to be a little bit different as we go back into everyday life, but we're nevertheless doing
that.
Yeah.
That's setting the attention different, the awareness different.
Yeah. The importance of that really came through in my training in peer spirit circle methodology, which is a communication methodology that really embodies attentive listening, intentional speaking, creating a container where everybody's an equal and so forth. And I transfer that into my tarot work as well. And containers are very important. You know, I've got a cup of tea in front of me here right now. You know, without that cup, that tea is pretty useless to me.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have a place to be. It doesn't have a space to be. Yeah, absolutely.
It's all over the place.
Yes, it's all over the place. Exactly. That's awesome.
And another helpful
awesome.
Container is the spread or the layout, right? That's another
yeah,
container.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's just layers of containment and how you want to create that containment. And I think also mm-hmm. for different clients, some need a stronger container or a firmer container, and some just need you to witness them. You know, they just need
yep.
you to sit there and go, wow, really? Tell me more about that. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that,
yeah,
I mean,
that can be good too. And I love asking questions. You know, some
mm-hmm.
I really it's one of my favorite things. You know, the creating of the spreads, the asking questions that take people to the aha moment, whether it's myself
mm-hmm.
or a client, and even turning the cards themselves into questions rather than statements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of saying something like, "Oh, the Five of Pentacles." You're poor.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's damaging.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it might
yeah.
be, I might ask something like, instead of that, I might say, in relation to what we're looking at here, how does material challenge fit into what we're talking about today?
Yeah, absolutely. Or what do resources mean to you? What are your resources, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
I think we can
yeah.
literalize things so much. And I think, you know, I mean, I think it's not just in terms of tarot card readers, but some, you know, therapists, certain types of therapy can be, like, really reinforcing this kind of fix-it kind of methodology. And I think what helps people really grow is to be in that space where, like you're saying, open-ended questions, you know, having curiosity. That allows them to be in a place of the imagination and in a new space in themselves. And that's just so powerful. You know, that's so evocative.
Yeah, we need to remember that the word therapist comes from a Greek word that means servant.
Yes.
Or an attendant.
Yes.
An attendant. To be a psychotherapist is to be an attendant to the soul or a
yes.
servant of the soul. It
yes.
is not about being the boss who declares you must do this and must do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Unless
yes.
somebody needs a really swift kick. Once in a while, if my, you know,
sometimes
one of my regular clients, if one of my regular clients is kind of a more outgoing personality and we have a good relationship, I might say, you know, I remember saying to one person, like, take the goddamn course already, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, I hear you saying this and this and this again and again and again. You know, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
and
that,
so,
in and of itself.
Here, yeah, the Ace of Swords is saying, take the damn new course. What are you waiting for?
Right. But that in and of itself is an intuitive approach to the whole thing. That's having a good
yeah.
rapport with your clients and knowing where they're at
yeah.
and what they need and holding that container just the way they need it to be held. So...
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to know when to be organic, like the death card, and you've got to know when
yeah.
to be more boisterous like the tower card.
Yeah, absolutely. And who needs it when? And you know, eventually when you mirror it for them in the right place, they'll do it for themselves, you know, when they have that clear mirroring experience. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So tell me a little bit, we've got about 20 more minutes, and tell me a little bit about more about this course. If people were going to take it, I saw on the website that it's offered free. I'm definitely going to take it, and I'm really excited about it. But I want to ask you, like, just take us kind of through it, and how will it be? How do you envision it?
Okay. I just want to clarify, the course itself is not free.
But there are
certain things I'm offering that are, like, I'm offering a video that talks about my journey from reading cards to becoming a tarot counselor, and, you know, a PDF of a process for people to examine their own tarot journey, and PDFs of a couple of spreads that I've designed that were helpful in tarot counseling scenarios, and things like that.
Very cool.
The course.
How much?
Yeah,
the
course itself. $335, and that's 8 weeks, and that includes 8 weekly teleseminars with me, online forum in which you can interact with me and the other people who are taking the course to really learn from each other. People will be getting a study buddy so they can actually practice the concepts with somebody, not just on their own. They get weekly handouts, et cetera, et cetera. There's going to be a really cool recommended reading list at the end. The first 10 people who signed up are getting, you know, free 20-minute sessions with me, stuff like that.
Awesome.
But, we're going to have a good time. And it really, we are going to cover a lot of the things we talked about, you know, the art of the helpful question, the art of intentional communication, how to really be present with people, how to be present with the cards, how to be present with your own process as this is going on, how to weave containers, how to create spreads that matter in the moment. What else are we going to be doing? We're going to be doing stuff to take the insights beyond head knowledge and into real life so that real change is more likely to happen rather than if you just sit and talk about it. We're even going to define some terminology together so that our community online has a real sense of what is this thing we're calling tarot counseling. And if you want to call it something else, that's fantastic. We'll try to use your terminology when speaking with you, so forth. I really feel that we're going to weave a really powerful and catalytic group of people who are going to take this work out into the world and really create some shifts in individuals, and then when those individuals shift, they contribute some kind of shift to their community or their family or their household or whatever, which I think is really what ultimately this work is about. You know, we often hear the term individuation or healing or whatever you want to call that. And that simply for me is the process of becoming the most oneself that one can be. It's remembering our wholeness. It's tuning into and discovering and honoring and actualizing the whole self. And I think that's where tarot counseling or any symbolic form of counseling, whether it's astrological counseling or goddess stone counseling or whatever you want to do, I think that's its ultimate purpose. And to know the self, capital S, the whole self, is to know more than, you know, it's to know more than where the skin ends on the person called James. It's, you know, I am also an extension of the tree I see outside my window. I'm an extension of the grass I see outside my window. I'm an extension of all the people walking on the street, et cetera, et cetera. I'm an extension of the clouds in the sky that I see above me here through the window. And if I'm able to broaden that perspective, my wholeness making and wholeness remembering helps something in the collective remember its wholeness. I think Carl Jung said that once we redeem something in ourselves, we redeem something in the collective unconscious as well.
Yes. And I think that whole idea of neurosis, you know, you see so many clients who are very, very anxious, and that's where this kind of fix-it mentality comes from. But when we realize our connection with everything, then we don't need to be anxious anymore. We don't need to have that neurosis. paresis, which is really just a busyness, which is about not being fully present, you know. So
yeah.
I think that that's just so wonderful that you're going to help people to take this journey and invite them to take this journey of being fully present. I'm wondering about it occurs to me as you're speaking, I'm thinking of the principle of synchronicity and how a lot of times when we take things out into the world and change the collective, it's because we start to see things differently and notice, you know, something is foreground that was background before, and these symbols make more sense to us as an embodied being. And I'm wondering about noticing synchronicities and how that might play into some of the work and has played into some of the work that you have done and are doing.
Right. Before I touch on the idea of synchronicity, I just want to backtrack briefly. You used the term neurosis.
Sure.
And,
yes.
And it just makes me think of a wonderful story. A group of us was on retreat one time with Dina Metzger, and Dina is a wonderful poet and writer and holder of counsel and a medicine woman who lives in Topanga, California, and we were with her on retreat up north in Ontario at one point here, and during one of our counsels, she said something that has stuck with me in the 5 years since that retreat, and that is, she says, she said, the time of the luxury of personal neuroses is over. We have We have too much to do in our world.
Isn't that the truth? That is really what is happening now. Yes. And that's the difference between the people who are becoming meaning makers and the people who are really struggling with the pace and feeling like they have to keep up with it. It's this whole idea of, you know, that we don't have time to do that. We just have to manifest what we're here to manifest, and we have to create the culture that we want to see.
Yeah. You know, somebody asks you, is my boyfriend coming back to me? I think, well, who really cares? You know, ultimately, he's gone, and you have work to do in this world. Let's get on with it. Now, let's get back to synchronicity. So synchronicity is meaningful coincidence. And
yes.
I think meaningful is the key word here. You know, yesterday I pulled the Queen of Wands from the Toss deck, and I did some journaling around that and some strategizing around that. And I went onto Facebook, and one of my colleagues also mentioned something about the Queen of Wands. And then another colleague had posted some image of the Queen of Wands with an interesting quote and so forth. And somebody talked about something to do with being bitten by a cat, you know, and there's this wonderful wild cat in the Toss Queen of Wands and so forth. And so there was this theme kept recurring. And to me, there was meaning in that because I had done some work around what the symbol is for me in that day. And I did some strategizing using that symbol for myself. And so that is what made it synchronistic. It was life saying to me, you're on track, you're on track, you're on track. Synchronicity is acausal. That's the important thing, too. It is not caused by something. We are meaning-making, pattern-seeking beings, and it's when we notice two or more things converge, and then we are able to weave meaning from that convergence, that's when it becomes synchronicity, and we can apply that to our process of evolution. If no meaning emerges, it's only coincidence.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So the meaning is the key part of that.
Has to do with the individual.
Yeah.
The individual brings the meaning to it.
Yeah, if I see the scarab beetle in the top version of the moon card, and at the same time I see a beetle crawling at my window or something, I have to think, okay, that might be something to take note of, whatever I'm just talking about in the card at that moment or thinking about in the card at that moment, that's something to take note of. If I don't really notice, or if that part of the card doesn't mean anything to me, then it's probably just coincidence.
Yes, to me it also has to do with the feeling that it brings to you. So you can see a series of things in relationship to each other, but if it's all something that you're thinking about, then often it isn't particularly pertinent. But if it's something that you're feeling, if it's something that you go, oh, my gosh, wow, and that reminds me, and it evokes something in you, then that often is a sign that it is meaningful for you, you know. And I would have to say, you know, there's a caveat to that, and people who are more thinking-oriented as opposed to feeling, perhaps if the thinking is particularly striking about it. But I think what people often do is they consult these metaphysical dictionaries and things, and then they look for things that should mean something to them. And they get further off course because they don't pay attention to what they really are drawn to. You know, they start going, oh, well, an obsidian means this, and at this stage in the moonlight, it means this. And that can be wonderful for ritual and creating ritual, but for really feeling a synchronistic connection with the universe around you, actually, that, I think, just sometimes confuses people and leads them astray from their own meaning-making. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, I do. I have a friend, Jeanette McCullough, who is a fabulous shamanic practitioner and teacher in Toronto, and I've been to many of her journeying circles, and, you know, many times she won't explain things to people. She will help them find their own meaning in it. You know, they'll say, oh, I journeyed to this particular place in the shamanic journey while you were drumming, and, you know, this particular animal came up, or that particular mammal or bird or reptile or whatever, what does that mean? And then, you know, and she'll say, well, and somebody might have an idea, oh, well, such and such book says that snakes are about this or that, or, you know, that budgies are about such and such. And you know, Jeanette has made it quite clear, you know, ask the being itself first. You know,
yes.
You have a personal relationship with this being, else it wouldn't have come to you. So why not just do what you would do with a friend? Ask it.
Yes, that's the personal unconscious, that your experience with it over time, how it's shown up in your history, your dreams, your, you know, associations. And yes, absolutely, ask it what it means instead of going away from it, you know.
Yeah. And certainly some of those other resources can be helpful to amplify it,
but
only after we've done some of our own exploration and creating relationship with it. And I think there's something about the creating relationship with tarot imagery too, and with the archetypal realm. And I think there's an important distinction here to make, that it's important to create relationship with it, but it's important not to identify with it, because that's where psychoses come in.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
I am not that particular animal who showed up in my journey, but I have a relationship with it. You know, I am not the world card, but I aspire to the wholeness and completion and choice-centeredness that the world means to me.
Yes, I really appreciate that distinction. I think that, you know, that whole identifying with it, I think that, like, sometimes the card can mean, or the totem can mean, if I did this on my journey this way, I might experience a different outcome or that sort of thing. But that isn't like, I am this, absolutely. I mean, I do think there's a place for that place of spiritual transcendence where you connect with that oneness facet, but the grounding piece is so important. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, it's important to remember our own identity in all this.
Absolutely, because actually that's how we strengthen ourselves, is by, you know, remembering our own identity, coming back to what we're here to do, that individuation piece that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Giving our gift.
And wholeness. Yeah, wholeness is really honoring every piece of ourselves, even the pieces we don't like.
Absolutely. Well, if we had more time, we could talk then about the shadow, but we only have 4 minutes, so I want you to be able to talk about how to get in touch for your wonderful course and all the wonderful work that you do. I guess this would be the time.
Okay, well, thank you. That's a kind invitation. My site/blog is jameswells.wordpress.com, jameswells.wordpress.com, and I've got 2 or 3 blog entries currently up that can link people to some of the free goodies and the video of my own story, And if they choose, they can. There's a link. There are links to the course itself. So people want to take this deeper journey with the tarot and learn how to use it in a way that can contribute to personal evolution, to evolution of the people who come to them, and even potentially to cultural evolution, because I'm hoping there'll be a ripple effect from this kind of way of working with it. And, of course, I really feel that by participating in this way, we'll be contributing to the evolution of the tarot itself. And so
awesome.
Go to jameswells.wordpress.com, and you'll see various links that get people to various places they need to be. And just if they want to, you know, poke around and read articles and what's been on my mind as well. And if they just want to send me an email to say hello, that information is there too.
I also want to suggest that I think that at some point in the future you should open this course or print it possibly for psychotherapists, because I think psychotherapists need these kinds of tools about connecting with the imagination, and that can be something in a clinical room that can grow the therapy so much more than the backstory that the person has to tell, you know?
Yeah. And certain people certainly are doing that. You know, Dr. Eleanor Greenberg in New York, whom I admire greatly, Dr. Art Rosengarten in Southern California, whose work I love and who's a wonderful person too. Mary Greer, even though she's not officially a psychotherapist, she does a lot of psychotherapeutic stuff. So I'm standing on the shoulders of some very, very good people who have already pioneered this kind of thing, and I'm simply one ripple in the greater pond. But
absolutely.
But I agree. I think that this way of working can be a very powerful way that all people can use, no matter what their helping profession.
And I think we have time for your poem too. We've got about 3 more minutes. So if you wanted to read your poem about the hanged man, that would be wonderful.
Well, it's not 18 pages long, so it'll fit into the time.
I read it on Facebook, so I know it's short.
Okay, haha, smart woman. Okay, well, this poem is called Trump 12. And as I did at the cafe, I invite anybody who's listening to imagine that this is a voice from a wise piece of yourself speaking to you. Trump 12. How long does non-action take? How long can I swim so strongly against cultural stream estranged? Do I mind this cocoon, accept this sacrifice, not get perplexed at my life hovering anti-upright? Numb no more, getting still, sinking deeply, ensures deliverance makes this experience bearable. I dissolve. Neptune's haven absorbs identity. Nature takes her sweet time, glutting herself with fullfold of ego, foiled remnants of fallen mass. I acknowledge that no transformation can occur without this holy embryonic surrender, delicate dropping down, meltingly all-embracing no-thingness. How long no longer matters. Action is overrated anyway. Would you like to know a secret? It is seldom remembered, much less spoken. Come close to me, even closer. I want you to hear this. Don't believe, even for one instant, that I'm waiting for you, for anyone, for anything. No, I'm not waiting. I'm simply here.
That's lovely. That's wonderful. It really embodies the hangman. Beautiful. Well, thanks so much, James Wells, for being on the show this evening, and thanks for the wonderful work that you're contributing.
Oh, thank you, Jenny, and what a sweet invitation to have to come on to your show like this. I hope we can talk like this again sometime.
Yeah, we'll talk about the shadow and dreams next time if you'd like to.
Oh, that'll be great fun.
Cool beans. Have a great evening.
I could even share a shadow embracing ritual that I've done with one of the cards that might be helpful to people at some point.
That would be wonderful. Have a great evening. Bye now.
Thank you. You too.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye now.
But when time stops, I found the
whatever you do between now and next week, go and make magic, feel magic, create magic, inspire magic, notice magic in your world. That is what we're here for, to share our gifts. Have a great evening. Bye now.